Today's program is brought to you by the International Culinary Center, offering courses that range from classic French techniques in culinary, pastry, and bread baking to Italian studies to management, from culinary technology to food writing, from cake making to wine tasting. For more information, visit culinarycenter.com.
I'm Erica Wides, host of Let's Get Real, the cooking show about finding, preparing, and eating food. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Welcome to Word of Mouth with Lady Sue.
Hello.
You're listening to Word of Mouth with Leyte Sue on heritageradionetwork.org. I'm your host, Leyte, and this is the start of the fall season here at HRN, the nonprofit food radio station. The unlikeliest of situations. In case you missed it, we record out of two shipping containers in the back of Roberta's Pizza in Bushwick, Brooklyn. And this season on Word of Mouth, we have quite the lineup. The likes of Michael Anthony, Mads Refslund, Dominique Kren, Justin Smiley, and Magnus Nilsson. And a bit about me, when I'm not on the air, my job is to eat and drink and connect people. I'm out and abouting, having the very conversations that you hear here, and working with my clients, which include chefs, sommeliers, restaurateurs, big brand startups, those doing what's most innovative and delicious. Today is the taste episode as we welcome on two totally incredible tastemakers in their respective fields and beyond. Live in the studio, we have Camille Becerra, chef owner of Navy Restaurant in Soho, New York. You may have seen her on Chopped Chef and on Instagram, known not just for her food, but also her style and pizzazz. And we'll talk cooking in monasteries and being a mom, and more. And she's joined by Damian Higgins, a.k.a. DJ Diesel Boy. I first met him dancing my head off to his music at a late-night holiday party in January, as they do in the restaurant industry, at Alex Stupak's Empeon. And he's a drum and bass DJ who loves to eat and actually sort of wishes he were a chef.
True.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
Hello.
Welcome, people we like.
Hey.
It's wonderful that you two were able to come on together on the same date because, in fact, you two have so much in common.
Did you know that, Camille?
I know we both love to eat. I know I always bump into you at really great restaurants.
Oh, there you go.
So... Okay, we have multi-hyphenate folks on the show today. Damian, how would you describe your personality and your work?
My personality?
Yes.
friendly, kind, caring, humorous. No, I'm a DJ / producer / record label owner / T-shirt design guy.
Slash eater,
serious home cook, sometimes food writer for First We Feast, / fun guy to hang out with.
Wow. All right. / destroyer.
/ guy that knows where the good places to eat are. / the destroyer, of course.
Yeah. So what's up with the destroyer? Like, why are you called the destroyer?
Well,
because you're super, like, low-key and calm in real life.
I'm pretty low-key. The destroyer, I don't know. For some reason, I always thought the word destroy was cool. It sounds cool. The music I play is pretty intense, and I kind of started calling myself that just because... I don't know. I thought it kind of went along with kind of like the vibe of my music. And, you know, I'm an old school like fantasy fan. So like Conan the Destroyer, I just like it. It sounds heavy and it's kind of funny as well. I mean, you're right. In normal life, I'm a pretty low key person. But when I play out, you know, it looks cool. I usually wear like a ton of like my fingers are covered in like silver rock jewelry, skulls,
wow,
things like that. I obviously have some tattoos and yeah, I don't know. It's fun. Something to play with.
Okay.
I guess.
All right. And Camille. You're also multi-hyphenate.
No.
Destroyer.
Yes. Food stylist. She also writes, starting to work on a cookbook, has a restaurant.
Mm. Yeah.
Is a fashionista.
Oh.
Nice jeans.
I love Camille. Love your jeans.
Camille is wearing those jeans that's like, it's like artfully baggy and artfully ripped up in a way that like you cannot achieve. It is so nonchalant.
Not for mere mortals.
Yes. Not
just impressed when I come to Roberto's and Bushwick.
So I've noticed that you always have a fabulous hat on. There's a reason for that.
There is. I mean, people tend to think it's like my thing. And well, I suppose that's cool. But really, you know, when I'm always working and I'm always cooking, and when chefs have to cover their hair, obviously we don't want that sort of like, you know, it's not part of like the trending plating. So once you have a hat on, you know, you commit to a hat all day because your hair is just not happy when you take off a hat after, you know, a bunch of hours. So I always have a hat, but that's only because I'm always working.
It so looks really good.
You don't want to have bedhead after you take your hat off. I'm the same way. Once the hat goes on, it stays on.
It's it. You're committed.
You're committed.
Yeah. Right.
So can I ask you guys, so I'm kind of, I think a hat does look so cute. And I have trouble with hats where like my ears are kind of crappy. Like I can't hear very well. And so the hat further obstructs my like sensory, you know, kind of.
Right.
Hearing.
I mean,
yeah. My, like, ability to interact with the world. And that's kind of a shame because...
Are you looking for hat suggestions?
Yeah, yeah. Like, what are some hat tips, you guys?
Well, the ball cap goes above the ear. So that usually, that's my...
But I understand what you mean because you also have very long hair. So if you have a hat plus the hair,
yeah.
It will, yeah, muffle things. So... I don't know. Just like be very selective with the people you want to talk to and get close to them.
Yeah, I actually wear hats only when I don't have to be aware of my surroundings.
Right.
So where are you from, Damien?
I've lived the longest part of my life in New York, but I've lived in Philadelphia for 7 years, went to the University of Pittsburgh, and then before that I grew up in small town America, for anywhere from towns 12,000 people down to 8 years. I lived in a town that had about 500 people.
Okay, and you were born in Florida.
I was born in Florida, unfortunately.
Interesting.
Yes.
All right. And what did your mom and dad do?
Well, my mom, you know, my mom was a florist and early on, and then my dad actually. Funny enough, my dad was like a pretty popular pop singer in the early 80s. He's considered like one of these one-hit wonder guys, but he had
one. Yeah,
who
is he?
His name's Bertie Higgins. He had this song called Key Largo that was like, he was on American Bandstand, getting solid gold. He sold like, he went like double platinum, sold all these records. He was like, when VH1 does top 40 love songs of all time, he's one of them. And he's a top 40 one-hit wonders, he's one of them. So he was super successful. Back in the early 80s. And now he still actually sings. Like in China, I think they did a Chinese New Year special a couple years ago. It was him and Michael Bolton were the only two Americans. And it was a show that was watched by like 1.5 billion people. Mm-hmm. So he's still kind of, he's very big in China. But he does that. And my dad was a singer. So, yeah, and he's still singing.
You mentioned your mom cooked for...
Yeah, my mom cooked.
A moment.
Yeah, she was cooking for the school district. She worked in like this the kitchen where they would like cook all the meals and then they would then send them out to all the schools. So she was definitely heavily involved in that for a long time. A lunch lady, I guess.
So, wow. So essentially, would you say that you got your music chops from dad and your
I would essentially say it sounds like a coincidence, which it is. It's actually a complete coincidence. My mom has had some influence on the fact that I'm into food now, but I've been a picky eater most of my life. But she, you know, my mom's food's pretty good. She was making me a lot of like processed foods back in the day, you know, like beanie weenies.
Really?
You know, like, you know, Oscar Mayer hot dogs, like things that taste good as a kid. But my mom wasn't like going hard on the cookbooks. And my dad, he is a singer, but his music career had nothing to do with me getting into DJing, oddly enough. You would think they're connected, but they're not. Just totally random.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay, Camille, you're Cuban, Puerto Rican.
Mm-hmm. I was born in Puerto Rico.
Mexican
hip-hop star. Well, the truth here is that, so Damien, as we mentioned, wishes he could be chef potentially.
Yes.
And he's, you know, very interestingly, like if you had started as a chef 25 years ago, we might know Damien the chef rather than Damien
That's
the
right.
Diesel boy.
Right.
Incredible.
Chef Boyardiesel.
Wow. Okay, really?
Yeah.
I love that.
Right there.
Oh my God! Let's. Oh my God! Yeah, that's our next.
We're not gonna go there.
Pop up idea. And Camille, her secret dream job is to be a Mexican hip hop star.
Could still happen.
Right?
I think it'd be fun, even though I'm not Mexican.
But Mexico.
Can you?
I think Mexico needs a hip hop star.
Can you rap?
A woman.
Let's see.
I mean, I love hip hop. I'm not going to go into any like old Wu-Tang right now.
but you are.
No.
We could get a beat going.
Engineer beat?
No.
Can you rap in Spanish?
No, okay. But it is my first language, so it probably would come in easier in Spanish.
So your mom, she's in New Jersey.
Yeah, I was born in Puerto Rico, moved to New Jersey at a very early age, so I do consider myself American. I grew up 10 miles outside of downtown Manhattan, so my high school years were very much, you know, about coming after school and having pizza in the village, and also late nights in the meatpacking.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. Oh, awesome. So you were like, do you dance? You love dancing?
I love dancing.
Okay.
I'm a dancer for sure.
Oh, I'm a dancer for sure. I think our next outing is being planned.
Yeah, it is.
But where are we eating first, though?
There's a good burger on the menu at Navy for dinner, if you don't ask
it's
for it.
It's not on the menu.
If you don't ask for it.
Yeah, it's not on the menu. You have to know to ask
for
it.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. That sounds awesome.
I'm sure you're on your night out. You're not going to go eat at your own restaurant, though. That's probably not
no.
the first place you'd want to go.
No, right. I wouldn't be eating there. I'd be cooking for you guys.
Right. Aww. There you go, cooking.
So, but where would you be going, Damien?
On a night out?
Yeah, like if we all hung out. Let's just say next
I mean, it
week.
Depends. Are we going to hang out in Brooklyn? I mean, it's very easy to someone that lives in Williamsburg to not leave
I
my
live
neighborhood.
I live in Williamsburg,
oh,
too.
Do
yeah.
you?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you hipster. I mean, if I stayed in the hood... I don't know. I like eating at Commodore, eating their like really lo-fi burgers and nachos. But I don't know. Manhattan, there's a lot of options. Maybe Chef's Table at Cocina, which is pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
The new Chef's Table. Be nice. Could go up and see my boy Bryce at Bettany and Eamon, get some good food and drinks. Options. I don't know. Where do you like to eat, Camille?
Well, I mean, I'm also like a creature of my neighborhood. Like, I don't like to really go out much. And I live in the Lower East Side, so I love Mission Chinese, and I love Estella. I love, sort of, I don't know. I still go to Prune. I love Prune.
Oh,
Prune is
yes.
like a very short walk away. And yeah, totally love going there.
So what were you and your mom cooking together when you were a little kid?
Well, Puerto Rican moms, they only cook one thing, and it's rice and beans every day. So, rice and beans all day,
really?
Every day. Oh yeah. Yeah. You know, you change up the protein, but the salad's pretty much the same as well.
What about plantains?
Plantains. Sweet plantains.
Sweet plantains.
Yeah, again, sweet plantains. Then you have the tostones. Then you have mofongo. I mean, plantains always, too.
Plantains are good.
They are super delicious. So you two are, you know, very much have reached a level of accomplishment in your own fields, but then you also touch other fields. I mean, I would say you in fashion, you have fantastic taste, and you, Damien, you know, you're reaching out into food again and again. You just have these truly incredible collaborations with world-class chefs.
Yeah.
And Damien, was there, when you were growing up, was there a person who you looked up to in terms of taste? Or like a moment, you know, some key, were there key moments and key people that influenced
you? I mean, looking, I mean, at the time you don't notice it. It's only when you look back and think about like how you kind of got pushed, you know, left and right with stuff. You know, my sister kind of turned me on to like a lot of like, she listened to like a lot of groups and bands and singers and whatnot. I mean, like listened to like Prince and like all these early 80s groups that were, at the time I didn't realize how influential they would be to me, but they kind of like, kind of programmed my way of thinking about music that I didn't realize until later in life that it actually had an effect on me. Mm-hmm. A cousin of mine used to go out to nightclubs and bring back like DJ mixtapes. And I lived in small town America in Colorado, had no idea, but he would bring home like, you know, 12-inch dance remixes of Madonna and we'd play them on this turntable. And I would, you know, again, I was not fully focused on that, but it was kind of like in my background and it definitely helped prep me for what I ended up doing later in life. And then, yeah, you know, probably my cousin and my sister were probably the most influential in that regard. But then obviously later in life, as I got into DJing, I've had people give me opportunities like here and there, like, you know, like give me like a shot playing one specific rave somewhere that in turn then opened up all these doorways for getting booked for all these other events because other people there that throw shows and saw me play this big event. So I've been kind of lucky along the way to have certain people hook me up with certain things in my DJing career. But yeah, definitely back in the day, my older sister and my cousin Charlie.
And at one point were you like, oh my god, food is delicious, I'm no longer picky, I'm going to be a foodie?
Well, when I was young, my mom did have the Betty Crocker cookbook. It was this orange cookbook that I used to look through. I used to like like the picture, the page with the marzipan cookies, I really enjoyed looking at those marzipan cookies. But it was like later in life, you know, even the early 2000s, I'd like go to Olive Garden. Like I just didn't care. I thought the breadsticks were good. Fridays was good. I just really had no taste. And it wasn't until I was away for a holiday and I started looking through some Taste of Home compendiums with like recipes in them, and decided I wanted to start trying to cook food. It looked interesting. I had time on my hands over the Christmas holiday, and I started cooking, and I was like, this is fun. And then at that point, things started clicking in my head. I'm like, you know, I travel for a living every week. Why don't I? Because a lot of times I would go to, like, say, Minneapolis, and I would see the hotel room, see the club, and I'd see the airport. That's it. So I was like, why don't I take advantage of the fact that I'm in this town and, like, go to some cool restaurants? And then it my DJing tour became a restaurant tour, which to this day is ongoing. I mean, every time I go to a city, I like have my list of places to go. In my scene, I'm actually the guy that everyone hits up. Like, I get artists hit me up all the time. They're like, I'm in Chicago, where should I go eat? I'm like, here's a list of 50 places, you know, Google the menus. But it was because of that that it kind of snowballed. And as I got into that, I was, you know, reading all the food magazines, watching food TV, and, you know, buying cookbooks left and right, and just really immersing myself in it. And then, you know, also talking to chefs and people involved, like, you know, bartenders and whatnot. But I'd go out and, like, talk to the people and engage, because I'm always curious to learn stuff that I don't know. So I was able to kind of, like, meet a lot of people and just got inspired, and it just has kind of snowballed into doing stuff like I'm doing now with, like, cooking stuff with Alex Stupak and whatnot. It's just kind of getting myself super immersed in the culture.
Wow. And Camille, influences, people that you're like, oh my god, she or he's so cool?
Initially, in food, I really didn't have much. I mean, I lived in a very sort of urban, low to middle class neighborhood, and town, and I really didn't, you know, the whole dining culture wasn't really a part of my knowledge. We did go every Friday to this classic sort of, you know, red sauce Italian restaurant, and I think in a lot of ways that influenced me. In Elizabeth, called Spiritos, and
is it still around?
It's still there, and it's still so good.
Ah.
And we would always eat. It was always very busy, and so we would eat at the bar area. And in order to go to the women's restroom, which was in the dining area, you would have to cross through the the actual kitchen. And it was just like the energy of that always was so mesmerizing to me. And the white tile, which is now so trendy, is like that was the norm. That was what kitchens look like. And, you know, it was a bunch of like grumpy, like Italian older men. And it was just so exciting and so such an odd sort of world to me. But not until I graduated high school and started traveling, because I had no idea what I wanted to do, did I come across people that were very much into food and started reading about food. And that's when really I got the urge.
Were you like a mini-me fashionista as a kid?
Well, I grew up in, you know, outside of New York.
I don't know what that's like. I grew up in suburban California.
Yeah, no. New York, you're like, you know, what you wear is very important in terms of like who you are and the sort of like, you know, what you want to show the world about yourself. So, yeah, I mean, from a very early age, I was very much into Vogue and into fashion. And into like, you know, knowing all the supermodels and knowing all the great designers. And so, and that translated into, you know, going to school with like, you know, a look, you know, my look, my sense of like, you know, this is who I am through clothes.
I was like super like late bloomer. I used to go to Limited too. And so, yeah. Is there like a memorable outfit that you know from a photo?
I remember telling my mom, like I might have been like, you know, 10, 11. I was like, I want a fur coat. She's like, oh, really? I was like, yeah, I want to wear it with jeans. And this was like back in the day, no one wore jeans with like fur coats.
Wow.
And I was just like, but I had seen it in Vogue. And my mom was like, what? You don't wear jeans with fur coats. It just like doesn't make any sense to her. But yeah, I remember that look. The high and low, you know.
High and low.
Yeah.
Dang, ahead of her time.
No stop.
After this very quick commercial break, we will return with Damian Higgins, DJ Dieselboy, and Camille Becerra of Navy. Stay tuned.
The National Culinary Center is a proud sponsor of the HeritageRadioNetwork.org. The ICC, with locations in New York and California, provide cutting-edge education to future chefs, restaurateurs, and wine professionals. We're proud to claim Dan Barber, Bobby Flay, and David Chang among our honored alumni. This is Dorothy Cann Hamilton from Chef Story. Check out our ICC website at internationalculinarycenter.com.
Welcome back to Word of Mouth with Leyte Su. I'm Leyte. I'm your host. We're on Heritage Radio Network. You can also find us on iTunes and Twitter. And today we have on Damian Higgins, DJ Diesel Boy, drum and bass DJ, friend of chefs, collaborator, and Camille Becerra, chef owner of Navy, and stylish woman, and food stylist, and writer. Two incredible tastemakers. Let's actually get your social media info out there. So, Damian.
Facebook is facebook.com/Diesel Boy. Instagram is the Diesel Boy. Twitter, DJ Diesel Boy. Three different ways.
Very complicated.
Very complicated.
How about you?
I am just Camille Becerra, all across the board.
Oh, shoot, Becerra. Oh, shoot, I've been saying it wrong entire life.
Hey, my entire life, people have misspelled my name and mispronounced it, so I'm
it's
like,
Becerra, I thought it was Becerra.
It is Becerra.
It's Becerra?
It's Becerra, like Sarah.
Oh, Becerra.
Yeah.
That is hard, okay.
I know, whatever.
Okay, well, I'm just Asian-ish, so...
all good.
I'm at Leitisu, L-E-I-T-I-H-S-U. We're at Heritage_Radio, and it's #WOMSHOW. That's short for word of mouth. Okay. What's the next place that you would want to travel to, just like for pure pleasure and eating and whatever?
That's easy. Okay. Anytime I can get to Tokyo, I try to go. Just because it's like... I guess I'll use the cliche. It's like New York and steroids. I know it's sense that there's so much going on, so many cool restaurants. You can't even get a bead on everything. You can't even like get a list of everything that's there. It's one of those places you can walk around and just kind of explore. And it's just, I love going to Japan. So Tokyo would be top of the list.
You know, I have a new travel company called Journey. And
free flights to Tokyo?
Yeah, exactly. So we're featuring food and restaurant and editor and local expert kind of folks. So I'm curious to get your Tokyo list.
Sure.
And how about you?
And I'm saying Japan not because you said it. But
right.
I've never been there. I love Japanese cuisine. I love the culture. I love how they're just so particular and they just invest their entire career in making this one thing over and over again. That to me is so mind-blowing because we don't know that here. You know, we're always moving on to the next thing and making things ours, you know. I've always told myself I only want to go to Japan when I have a bucket load of money. I'm not going to bring any luggage. I'm going there. I'm buy like the fashion in Japan. Sick. I want to just go buy like a wardrobe there, like to wear there, a luggage. And then obviously I'm going to spend so much money in the spas and the kaisaki dinners and et cetera. So I'm saving. It may be a few years, but no, I want to go there legit.
That's a good idea. I mean, you kind of like the size for the women's clothes over there. You're like the perfect size for the clothes because they actually don't do a lot of different sizes. It's like some of the places they have one size for the women's clothes.
It's so minimal and chic.
Oh, yeah. And there's brands
you've
never heard of. So you'll wander around. You'll be it's so amazing. Even with guys' clothes, because I shop as well. I love shopping. And like, there's just brands. It's just a whole other world of brands. You're like, you've never seen any of this stuff before. So it's super fun to go shopping over there for clothes.
It's like one size, like skinny or skinnier.
Small.
Right.
I'd be small
or smaller.
Small right. Human. Yeah.
Speaking of shopping, how do you make your purchasing decisions?
Usually about 3 drinks in at 2 in the morning online.
All right.
I mean, my stuff is usually like, I don't really have expensive taste. I wear a lot of like clothing wise, I wear like black t-shirts, like concert tees and whatnot. So for me, it's like, if I want something, I see something I usually just try to buy it. But again, I don't buy expensive stuff. So it's just, if I want it, I buy it.
Yeah, you're lucky because guys can just do the whole, like, if you're a cool guy, you can rock like the white t-shirt that costs like nothing or at most $100.
Well, high and low. You want to have like nice shoes or jacket or something.
Okay.
Like, Camille, to defer to your philosophy.
Well, you know, I was a very, very poor cook for many, many years. So I learned to just buy what I absolutely love. My wardrobe is super slim and super minimal. And then I always refer back to like that Andy Warhol quote, which says, think rich, dress poor.
There you go.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. I don't know that quote, but I like it.
Yeah, I love like it. That. Because it's like, why spend so much money on clothes when you just really just, as a chef as well, like I wear the same thing over and over again. So I just like think like, you know, I just think poor when I'm coming to wardrobe. I just like buy only what I need.
Yeah. For me, save for very, very comfortable, awesome shoes. Everything else, I mean, well, which I wear again and again and again and again and again. I do the Steve Jobs thing where I do wear the same dresses again and again. It's a bit hard. It's a bit hard as an influencer. You know, you're like shopped all the time.
Totally different. Yeah. Totally different careers. Totally different, like, clothing mindset.
But you...
I'm my job, I have to wear uniforms. So my mindset of clothing is very that. It's like, I have a uniform.
Yeah, and I
that
guess
I wear every day.
I do a dress uniform, but like a different job.
Yeah.
I feel ya. You traveled all around the United States in sort of figuring out, hey, like, if I want to go to school, what do I want to go to school for?
Right.
And you worked at two monasteries.
I did.
You cooked at two monasteries.
I did. I wound up at two Zen monasteries, one in New Mexico and one in California. I learned how to grow vegetables and make tofu and all about these different types of grains, all about macrobiotic cuisine.
Wow.
Yeah. So it was a very influential time in my career. I was just out of high school and felt very fortunate to be there.
Was there a moment?
It's cool.
Was there a moment that was, I mean, particularly memorable for you? Because it's hard to kind of imagine what it's like to, like, not every chef has had that experience.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, it was wonderful. It was like, I can't pick out anything that, but
how did you even get there?
One of those weird things. I worked with this macrobiotic chef for a bit, and he's like, you sort of don't belong here. You need to like go out west. And was like, there's this one place, they're looking for a chef. We do, you know, he knew the person that ran it. Turned out to be a Zen monastery, and I learned how to meditate, and I still meditate to this day. You know, I just feel like, you know, if you're like sincere about like what it is that you want to do and who you are, and you're, you know, and you make a big effort to be a good person, you know, people kind of help you out and kind of direct you to certain places that you would never even think of going.
Are you going to do, like, now that vegetables are in, like, is the next Camille Becerra restaurant going to be a, like, Buddhist vegetarian? Because Buddhist vegetarian food is fucking delicious.
It is delicious.
Can you swear on the show?
I think so.
You know, at Navy, I do a lot of vegetable dishes. I mean, yeah. Navy is predominantly a sort of seafood and vegetable restaurant. I, for my next place, which I'm, you know, now just trying to understand what it is, it's definitely going to have its basis on sort of the philosophy of macrobiotic and Ayurvedic, but not like hitting people over the head with it, but really just sort of a natural, beautiful menu based on just food and a menu that makes people feel really good and nourished, but like visually like intoxicating.
And what was the most, when you were traveling around the U.S., what was the most like surprising city, like where you're like, oh my god, I didn't know this was here, or you know?
I don't know, I don't remember. I guess Las Vegas. I remember going traveling from Texas to Los Angeles, and I was on a Greyhound. This girl was like, hey, there's a Lollapalooza in Las Vegas, let's go. And we went, and then like that night we're like hanging out with the Beastie Boys. It was like a little retarded, but Las Vegas back then, totally different and so like bizarre and creepy.
Yeah,
incredible. Damien, everyone wants to be, everyone and their mother wants to be a DJ, and your dad was actually actually a musician. And what we all get to make a living doing what we absolutely love. Not everyone gets to make a living as a DJ. Like, what? How did you even figure that out?
Yeah. I mean, I was in college. I really didn't know exactly what I wanted to do. I know I like computers, so, and I really wasn't super hardcore about it. Like, I didn't want to be in computer science, so I started taking information science, which is like computer networks and whatnot, because I don't know, I didn't know what the hell I was going to do. So it just so happened I started DJing for fun because I was going to parties. Basically, I was going to some early parties in Pittsburgh, and I was buying music. I was buying like CD compilations, and I was like, no one is playing these specific tracks at these shows. So I started, I was like, I'm going to throw my own party. So I started throwing parties and like kind of fake DJing, like, you know, fading shit together. I guess we can swear on the show.
Mm-hmm.
And then I started like learning. I met some guys that knew how to actually DJ with turntables, and they taught me the basics. And so I would go on their radio show, and every week I'd do this radio show. I'll get to the point really quickly. So long story short, I started getting booked and making decent money. And then it got to the point where in one show I was making 2 weeks of my salary at the internet company I was working at. And I'm like, I might as well just try to do this. But the thing about DJing is like...
You're working at an internet company.
Yeah, I was doing tech support, you know, at 9 a.m. phone call. Like, how do I plug my mouse in? It was stupid. But, it, you know, the thing about DJing with it is with like any like freelance thing is there's no job security at all. So there's no safety net. And if, God forbid, you know, I don't get a phone call for a show for the month, then I'm broke and I can't pay my rent. So it was kind of a very scary move for me. But then when I started doing it and focusing on it, I got lucky. I guess the music I was playing, the style of music, the style of my DJing was, it resonated with people, and I was able to actually turn this into a career. And I've essentially been, doing this, traveling nonstop every week, DJing for 17 years straight, just paying my bills with that. And I've just been very lucky. But again, I got into it from a passion angle. I didn't get into DJing because I'm like, I'm going to be a big DJ, like, which is how a lot of the people kind of look at it now. I got into it strictly because I really enjoyed DJing. And I still love the actual art of DJing, which is something that's been completely, not completely, but like mostly lost now. Like, the art of DJing is now... Mm. An obstacle to get on stage and play music. I still embrace DJing. If I wasn't DJing for a living, I would probably DJ for fun as a hobby.
Right.
I actually
while being
like
a chef.
It. While trying to be a well, you got to earn chef by trying to cook food. I totally defer to people that can actually, like Camille, that are true chefs. I'm actually a little annoyed when people throw the term chef around lightly. I think it's disrespectful.
Mm-hmm.
But I would love to cook food and DJ in my garage in the spare time. Be nice.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So what was... okay, so you had this one point where you were making more in one show than in 2 weeks at your mm-hmm. as an IT fellow.
Yeah.
So what? But what was that like big-ish break that where you kind of felt like, phew, oh my God, I think I can maybe be good at this.
Well, it was around that time when I quit my job and moved to Philadelphia. But I had gotten actually right before that I'd gotten lucky. This company had put out this compilation of my kind of music, drum and bass, and they had asked me because I'd gotten a name for myself at that point. And I was really well known, like the rave community on the internet, which mm-hmm. was before the World Wide Web. It was like this kind of like mailing list community. But I was given an opportunity to mix this compilation, which was going to be distributed nationally in all the record stores. And after I had that happen, then I was getting booked like on the West Coast, which I'd never gotten booked before. And it completely opened up all the markets to me, which I had not been able to get access to before. I was pretty much relegated to New England area or maybe like right Midwest. And that at that point, I realized that I could do this and it was going to happen.
Wow.
Good times.
Camille, I didn't know that you had a restaurant before Navy, and that restaurant perished in a terrible fire.
Yeah, so 5-alarm fire.
That night, like, what? Tell me about that.
First of all, I just want to say I at Navy, I'm not an owner and not a partner. I'm just a chef.
Thank you for clarifying that. You're just so fabulous. I just attach words onto you.
Thank you, though.
I've been known to do that. Oops. Promote people.
I know. There was some time where I was thinking about possibly partnering, but I I'm maybe not at this point, but I was the owner of this little restaurant in Greenpoint right before Greenpoint and Williamsburg went on steroids.
There we go.
back when there was really not much, and I had just moved there, and I thought, wow, this place needs like a really great little neighborhood spot. So I opened a restaurant. We were open for about 4 months. 4 years, not 4 months. It was the night of the presidential election, where Obama was made president. Mm-hmm. And there's huge. Someone runs in. We're all like watching the TV. Someone runs in. They're like, your second floor is engulfed in flames, and it was a full house. Maybe 50 people, 60 people inside, and everybody ran out. And as we were running out, like the windows were like exploding. It was like the craziest shit.
Whoa.
But, lost everything. I had put this restaurant, together on my own and really invested a lot of time and money into it, and, lost everything in one night.
When it was happening, what was your first thought as everyone was running out?
Well, the fire people came, mm-hmm. and these were like, you know, the engine house was just two blocks up. So I've had this relationship with them, coming in and having beers and burgers and et cetera. And so, you know, these were people that I knew, and I just was like, wow, like, I just have to confront that this is like my reality and I'm just not meant to be here. I remember talking to the fireman at the time and just thinking like, wow, like I'm just not meant to be here. It was just very, very apparent.
Like, what was it called?
It was called Paloma.
Huh.
On Greenpoint Ave.
The name of your
daughter.
Yeah. How old is she now?
She's 14.
This is incredible. I cannot believe you've made a 14-year-old human.
Yeah.
You look like a daughter. You look like a...
Oh, thank you.
You guys look like kids, by the way. I just want to compliment you guys.
Thank
All right.
you.
Nice. So is she... Do you cook with her? Is she like a...
She's a foodie. She, you know, we go to restaurants and she's like, this needs acidity. It's not balanced. And obviously she notes everything that I make that's not balanced. I don't know. I mean, she loves food. She loves, you know, we have always traveled with like food destinations in mind. For her 13th birthday, which is like a big, year, she didn't want a party. She wanted to go to the best restaurant in New York City.
Which was?
11 Park Madison. And it was it blew her mind. she's a big foodie. She grew up in restaurants, you know?
That's great.
Are you like the cool? You're like the cool mom, right?
Yeah, no, don't tell her that. Because I'm actually like a cool mom. She's like legit. You're so not. Get out of my room.
Does she borrow your clothes?
No. If I wear something, it's absolutely the uncoolest thing ever.
That's very interesting.
Yeah, it's that age. I mean, I trust that she'll come around.
Damien, if you could just wave a magic wand and have like a dream restaurant tomorrow, like what would? Maybe you could throw in a chef in there or some music stuff for collabo sake.
I don't know. That's a good question. I have no idea. I kind of want to open like a really cool hot dog place.
Really?
I like hot dogs. I feel that
I love hot dogs.
Hot dog is like New York's like a hot dog town. Me personally, I'm not super impressed with a lot of the offerings out there. I mean, there's some, but overall, I mean, like Bark's got a good thing going. And I think Kriff's Dogs is good late at night, but I've made hot dogs. I got a hot dog on the menu at PDT with Bryce Schumann. We did a collab hot dog that was on the menu. That we're still trying to get on the permanent menu. It was on the menu for like this hot dog thing with First Food Feast. But I really think that I could do a proper hot dog place because, yeah, I totally could eat a hot dog every day. It's bad.
What are your ideal accoutrements?
Depends. You got to have all the different flavors and you got the texture and all that. The hot dog I did with Bryce that we did for PDT was, can I tell you what was on it?
Totally.
So we wanted to do like a Moroccan kind of Middle Eastern kind of hot dog, which usually it's like they put hummus on a hot dog and they call it a day. So we did like a lemon olive oil whipped labneh with lime pickle, puffed grains tossed in harissa powder. We brushed the sides of the bun with aged beef fat and then put a za'atar on it and clover sprout for the freshness. But it tasted like really good Indian food, basically.
Okay, so basically you just totally smushed my question. Ah, cool. My very last question for you. Best bite you've had in your, you know, nightlife, traveling, oh my gosh, I'm, you know, before or after a show?
That's a hard one. I will say this. For a consistent bite, a place that I've been to quite a bit, uh-huh. I just think it's really good. I go to Pizzeria Mozza in L.A. I mean, that's like my spot. Yeah. The desserts are really
open
good.
Late.
The budino's good. I mean, for
11.
As far as open late, I'm usually like hitting up a hot dog cart outside of a show.
Okay.
I don't really focus on the late spots. I focus on the pre-show restaurants. But Mozza is pretty good. But recently, one of the best meals I had on the last tour, I did a few of them were like, I did Next to the French Bistro menu. We did Husk Nashville, which is good. Niche in St. Louis. Then Trentina in Cleveland. Those were all really good meals.
You're memorable. That you have those at the on the tip of your tongue.
I eat out a lot.
Yeah, thank you so much for your recommendations.
You're very welcome. Write those down, people.
Absolutely. And get him on his social media. And Camilla. Because I'm thinking, but Sarah now. Okay.
Remix.
Yes! Okay. Camille.
Can I just say, don't feel bad because it happens often.
I have to say, I'm the world's best speller, and I had to like look at your name 10 times before the show happened.
Yeah, we've talked a lot,
yeah.
But we've never talked about my name.
Yes, and you've never corrected me. Thank you.
Well, you've never I don't think we've ever been in a situation where,
like, I'm saying your name, yeah, like 10 times in like, yeah, half an hour. Okay. Dream job if you were not a chef. Let's say you just couldn't cook.
Well, definitely like a photographer.
Ah, yes.
Of travel.
A photographer of travel.
Yeah,
that sounds pretty fun, and your Instagram's pretty qualified.
Oh, thank you.
Well, I want to know how long you spend on those photos. Come on.
This is the deal. I have always been such a big sort of food publishing and cookbook junkie, and I think throughout all the years my eye has just sort of been trained to understand light and understand good light and composition. And so then working as a food stylist and working with amazing talented photographers, you get a sense of it. You give me a regular camera, I don't know what to do with it. I'm just like strictly iPhone. I think I've just seen that many pictures.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, your pictures are great.
Thank you.
Very
that
good.
Means
iPhone
a lot.
Only. That's
Thank
great.
You.
Impressive.
So much
Watch
love.
Watch out, Daniel Krieger.
Yeah.
He's coming for you, buddy.
Daniel, don't
Hi, Daniel. Thank you so much, Camille Becerra.
Yay.
And Damian Higgins, yep. DJ Diesel Boy, the Destroyer. But in real life, he's actually really nice.
Thanks.
We're live 2 p.m. Eastern every Wednesday on Word of Mouth, HeritageRadioNetwork.org. I'm your host, Leyte Sue. Thank you so much for listening. Today's break music was provided by DJ Diesel Boy.
And Mayhem, Downlink, and Mark the Beast.
Sorry. Ooh, ooh, of course.
Turn up.
And our engineer today, Liz Smith, thank you so much. The theme song to the show is, as always, provided by Jackie Gordon, the singing chef. Our sponsor is the International Culinary Center, where I was just at earlier this morning talking to Jacques Papin. And thank you, as always, listeners, for tuning in. You guys rock. If you liked what you heard, tell your friends to subscribe to the show on iTunes and get in touch with us at heritageradionetwork.org. By the way, next week, our new website launches, and so watch out for it. Until next time, eat well, be swell.
Stay tuned now for a short clip from A Taste of the Past, live every Thursday at noon, right here on heritageradionetwork.org.
It wasn't really until the 1960s, particularly the 1970s, that they took off. And I have a theory about this, which has to do with the fact that donuts do well in times of economic crisis. Mm. So that if you look at the Depression, donuts were big. If you look at the 1970s, donuts were big. And if you look at the first decade or last maybe 10 years when we've been in this economic crisis, right? Once again, donuts become huge.
In episode 178 of A Taste of the Past, Michael Crandall talks about how and why the donut has remained a top-selling dessert, even in tough economic times.
So they take off in the 1970s, and Dunkin' Donuts becomes by far the biggest chain.
Yeah. Well, and then, and as I mentioned earlier, suddenly, I don't know, you know, everything becomes the new darling. You know, the cupcake became the new craze, much attributed possibly to, you know, the television show Sex and the City.
Oh, absolutely.
Trends.
I think that's right.
And then donuts suddenly, you know, they never went away. They've always been around. But all of a sudden, they became this new craze with odd flavors, exotic flavors, any flavor you can imagine. And donut shops, fancy donut shops, if you will, popping up all over the place, small ones. You know, artisanal donuts. Once
yeah,
again. What do you attribute to that?
Well, I do think that part of it has to do with the Great Recession. Mm-hmm. I do think that has something to do with it. Mm-hmm. Donuts, like a cupcake, is an affordable treat. But I think there's something else about donuts. Donuts have a kind of a street cred that cupcakes will never have.
If you want to learn more about the history of food, check out A Taste of the Past every Thursday at noon and available all times at heritageradionetwork.org and on iTunes.
Heritage Radio Network is a member-supported nonprofit organization broadcasting over 30 live shows a week. To learn more and donate, visit our website or connect with us on iTunes, Stitcher, Facebook, Twitter, Tumblr, and Instagram for more. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archive programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.